The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arfcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begin.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arfcom starts now.
That's right, Radio Free Arfcom starts right now. I am your host, John Gold. As usual, we are here on a beautiful Monday evening. Another great bang-up Radio Free Arfcom show lined up for you tonight. We've got some great guests, and we have Big Victor from Tactical Night Vision giveaway going to be on here in the second hour of the show. Usual, we get started with our A number one man from the NRA board. His name is Joe DeBurgolis. Joe, how are you today?
Great, John. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well, doing well. A little technical hiccup just to get the show started. I had a little moment of panic there, but we are back. Everything is fine. And we didn't really get a chance to talk like we wanted last week. You were in the airport coming back from the great NRA meetings. But there were a couple of things I wanted to talk about this week before we talk about anything else from the NRA meetings, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Now, there's this big hoopla going around about the military destroying their expended, once-fired cartridge cases. And there's been some talk about generals getting kickbacks and personal funds and whatnot. But as I understand it, there's a congressman that's going to introduce an amendment to take care of that.
Well, we reported this a few weeks ago, perhaps a couple months ago now.
Right.
Regarding the National Defense Authorization Act, which basically allows the demilitarized expended brass to go to the civilian population. There was some discrepancy that it was being destroyed. We fought that battle last year. This year, there's a little hiccup. We had the senators, Tester and Baucus, get on top of that. They did. There was an amendment now because of a little bit of confusion by Representative Brad Ellsworth. He's a Democrat out of Indiana, which basically compels military bases to sell all their small arms ammunition and ammunition components intact, meaning they don't need to be demilled for scrap as long as items are not which are unserviceable or unsafe. So what that means for us is that there's going to be a plentiful amount of once-fired shell casings coming out to the public, which we can obviously reload and use for our own competitions, pleasure, match, and that type of thing.
Now, I'm not familiar with how this brass actually makes it from the government to the civilian population. How does that work? Is it auctioned off, and then do you know anything about that?
I know just a little. What happens is it's all collected. It's sold to a variety of companies out there that are vetted by the U.S. military and the government as a whole, and then those companies reuse it and sell it to offer to the civilian population. They may reload it themselves. They may sell it as once fired single fired cartridges, that type of thing. So it's something where it goes to a venue of a variety of different companies, but it's ultimately made available to the public at large.
Oh, okay. Now, like I started off saying, at the beginning of the show, we were on with a slightly truncated segment with you last week as you were in the airport coming home from a long week of meetings and festivities at the NRA annual meetings. And there's actually been a couple of interesting stories come out, kind of secondary to the NRA annual meetings, but something to do with them. Apparently, the Violence Policy Center, our good old friends there at the VPC, had some kind of problem with the NRA meetings in Charlotte this year.
Well, they normally do. Josh Sugarman is someone who was taking up the cause way back when. He was basically the pioneer anti-gun type of policy movement. His son, unfortunately, was killed in a handgun, I believe, in the late 60s, early 70s. And Josh basically took that as the standard and has been fighting ever since. Well, there's not really a membership base for the Violence Policy Center, VPC. It's basically Mr. Sugarman receiving funds from the Joyce Foundation, and along with other foundations out there that are so inclined to perpetuate his anti-gun sentiments. Well, he obviously doesn't like the NRA, and wherever he can, he tries to throw a shot. But when you have 72,000 plus members show up, you have a great week of cheer and good fraternal order. There's not really too much he can argue about. He's trying to call attention to his own plight. If you recall, John, he's the one who came out against Eddie Eagle a couple years back, saying that it was an effective program. That program's been taught that it's 24
right.
million thus far. He likened it to the camel used in the cigarette ads that would entice firearm ownership or misuse by kids. And it's something where he just tries to grab headlines, unfortunately, at our expense. But he's always funded by some outward organization.
I guess there's always got to be someone that's got a problem with it, right?
Well, there is. You know, that's his thing, and I respect him for the loss of his son, and I would always, you know, honor him for what he's doing. But the thing is that he doesn't really have that much traction anymore because time and time again, whatever he voices his opinion in opposition from, we just go back at it and show him exactly what it's all about, where it's guaranteed in the Constitution, how we as in the NRA teach every single day safe handling of firearms, how we improve marksmanship, how we make sure everything is stored in a safe and correct manner, and how we basically exercise our Second Amendment privileges. So it's one of these things where he has his cause, we have ours, and obviously we trump it every turn of the debate.
And speaking of trumping his cause, this is probably stuck in his craw a little bit. A story came out in the Charlotte Observer stating that actually during the NRA annual meetings, crime in Charlotte went down a significant amount for that same week from the year before. Is that right?
That's it. It happens every year in every place we go to. Summer, when you bring, last year we had 68,000, this year 72 plus and counting people into an area who are freedom lovers, who understand what it is to keep them bear arms. The message gets out to the local populace that we're not to be confused with any other conferencee who may be coming in. So they had about a 45% reduction in crime as a whole since we were there that whole week. And many of the other law enforcement officers I spoke to during that time actually enjoyed because they were treated with respect. Almost every NRA member came up to them and thanked them for their service. It was something where you get a yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. When the law enforcement officer approached any of the conference attenders, I know meeting attendees. So they actually loved it. There was many of them sought me out and we talked, and they absolutely loved our presence there. They want us to come back soon.
That's just amazing. I love that story. I'll read it, just the actual paragraph here real quick. According to the CharlotteObserver.com article, Captain Jeff Estes, commander of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department Central Division, said crime for the week was 45% lower than the same week a year ago. That's what happens when you get a whole bunch of law-abiding citizens who happen to be gun owners and respect their Second Amendment and practice their Second Amendment privileges, and the bad guys find out about it, and they stay home that week, or maybe they just go over to the next county over for that week. But that's just a great story right there. So much for the so much for the naysayers. I don't know what they're going to say about that.
It's something where, you know, anybody who attended, and I just want to take a moment to say thank you to Dan Meyer and Richard and Robert and Joe and a couple other people that are regular ARFCOMers who I didn't have the opportunity to meet up with, but did great work while they were there. When you have this kind of people come together, you'll never have a bad time. We got to get you out to the show next year. It's one of these things where you just go around and every person you meet, be it in the seminar or on the floor or at one of the panel sessions, they have like interests. They believe in this country. They believe in our armed forces, our first responders. They believe that, you know, they look you straight in the eye. They give you a firm handshake. They believe in everything that's made this country great. And that's why you become so invigorated when you go down to these. When you hear the speakers that we talked about last week, and when you hear some of the people that swirl about the whole issue come forward and express themselves. They come from farms, they come from cities, they come from all over this great country, and they converge upon a given area. And 2-to-1, they find kinship and brotherhood and great fraternal cheer. It's a great experience, it really is.
Now, I wanted to ask you, we didn't really have a lot of time to talk about, we had a great overview from you last week of the annual meetings, but I kind of wanted to get it more from like a personal perspective from you. Like maybe a couple of the highlights that were maybe personal to you. Maybe you got to meet someone that you wanted to meet or you didn't think you'd get to meet, or maybe somebody in a speech said something that really meant a lot to you. We kind of wanted to get a personal take on the annual meetings instead of just the broad overview.
Well, I tell you, every time I attend one, as I alluded to earlier, it's just a great, great time. Unfortunately, because of my duties as a board member, I didn't really meet up with a lot of ARFCOMers. I talked to them on the telephone. I texted them back and forth. But some of the people that I've met up with, Chuck Norris, I had a great visit with him and his wife, Gina. I met him a couple times along my life's path. Real good man, along with Marshall Teague. You may remember Marshall Teague from Roadhouse. He was the adversary in the last scene where Patrick Swayze and he were fighting back and forth in the martial arts school.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Marshall's a great, great advocate. He's a true believer in the Second Amendment. He was there with Chuck Norris. We had a great sit-down, great talk. That was one of the people that really made a difference with me. Both of them are very, very good spokesmen on our issue and just down-to-earth, very warm. Marshall and his wife, Lindy, just as good as Chuck and his wife, Gina. That was me a little famous, you know, brush with somebody famous. But when you're around Chuck and Marshall, you don't know that they're stars in their own right. They're just good, down-to-earth, solid people.
That's great.
Had the opportunity to meet some of the other speakers that were there. You know, one of my personal heroes is Oliver North. I served with him on the board. He's right now, people don't know, he's battling prostate cancer. But you wouldn't hear from him. He's just somebody that has the best interest of our fighting men and women in the forefront. He's been over in the sandbox 22 times covering the wars. He's been all over the place. Great guy. He was there. I mean, obviously, we had, Governor Palin. He's just a real nice person. She got an infectious smile and a real nice person. And some of the other people that were there, the congressmen and senators, and they're all, you know, you asked a question specifically who really touched me. Chuck Norris and Marshall, Sarah Palin, Oliver North, Ted Nugent obviously just wears his allegiance on his sleeve. But just the members I met, the NRA members came up. I'm very, very fortunate to serve on the board, John, and I don't own a firearms manufacturing company. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not an elected official. I'm just somebody that goes out there and tries to work hard. When I meet another member who reaches into their own pocket, spend money for airline tickets or pay for gas to come down in their trucks to the annual meeting, it's great just to meet up with them. So they make an impression with me just as great as it was sitting down with Chuck Norris. It was great sitting down with Johnny Sixpack and learning where he came from and how far he came to just to support the NRA. That always touches me because those are the people who sometimes can't afford to be there, but they feel that there's a calling for them to be there. So it's always good they make their acquaintance. The vendors, I mean, the vendors are out there, each and every one of them, always trying to support the cause. So it's a special place. It really is. Because from every level, every social economic area, I mean, all races are represented there, and all genders and all other type of definitive characteristic, you know, you group people in. But it's just the experience you have, it's just you're smiling constantly and meeting people going forward. So to answer your question, as much as fun as it is for my position to meet the celebrities, to meet the people that we all know, it's just important to meet the members. And I've had some great, and you make lifelong friends. I'm still communicating with people. My first annual meeting was 12 years ago, and I still communicate with them every year.
That's fantastic. The fraternity of gun owners is just great. It's so strong. Now, before I let you go, I'm going to spring a little surprise on you. There's a story that came out today on NRAILA.org, and I don't know if you've had a chance to check it out yet. Apparently, Aletto versus Glock was refused to be heard by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court refused to hear the appeal. Are you aware of this news yet?
I heard something about that. I don't know the details as to why they didn't grant it, but if you have it there, we can talk about it.
I just kind of skimmed over the article here real quick. It doesn't give the reasons necessarily why, but let's suffice it to say that's a great victory for gun owners. Now, we know that gun manufacturers cannot be sued and held liable for manufacturing their weapons, which is really big. The Supreme Court's done a lot of good for us in these last few decisions.
Oh, it really has. And, you know, and there's a lot of things, a lot of people want to sit there and blame President Bush for some of his policies, and sometimes the blame is warranted. But you look at what he did with the Supreme Court and put Justice Roberts as the Chief Justice, that's his legacy right there. You know, we fought that battle with liability to the manufacturers a couple years back. We were successful. And this information about Glock today proves it. So that's helping the industry. If it went the other way, you would have saw all these industries move out of this country, like other industrial complexes. So it's something where we have made vital, vital steps in the protection of our Second Amendment, in our industry, in our love of freedom. And that's because of individuals like you, John, myself, everybody else getting involved and just working towards a common goal. And, you know, getting the same boat, we all row it the same way, and we're going to get to that finish line. This is just another great way of showing when we sit there and we keep our eyes on the prize and moving towards the goal line. And remember, people, this is going to be my personal thing until November. We can really affect the outcome. We can look for real change. Take 5 minutes to register to vote. If you're not already, God knows why you're not, but if you're not for whatever reason, please register to vote. Go to triggerthevote.org. You can do it there if you like. But this is one of the reasons why we do these things, why we fight these battles, why NRA, ILA is out there fighting for our legislative rights and privileges and passages of laws that ensure those rights and privileges.
Absolutely. It's nice to hear all the good things coming around. And like you said, this November we can really, really affect some serious change. Anyway, Joe, I want to thank you for being on the show as usual. Thank you for all the work you put in on the board as an NRA board member, specifically for our farmers and black rifle enthusiasts such as ourselves. I just wanted to say thank you as usual, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, John. It's always great to speak to you. Have a great show.
Thank you. That is Joe Berglas, our resident AR15.com. He was the very first AR15.com endorsed candidate who became a board member for the NRA. We love having Joe on. He brings a great perspective, and the work he does behind the scenes, this guy is the hardest working man, I'm telling you. This guy really works really hard. Before we get to our next guest, we are going to have the Douchebag of the Week Award, and it's going to be really quick this week because we got a full jam-packed show. But there can only be one guy. There can only be one Douchebag of the Week. And I think once I say who it is, everybody listening is going to say, oh yeah, he was the Douchebag of the Week. On Thursday, Felipe Calderon, that's right, Pepe Calderon, president of Mexico, where the gun laws are so prohibitive that nobody can really have one, and that's why his state is a failed state. The narco-terrorists control his whole country, They go around ravaging, pillaging, killing, raping, and plundering. But he decided he was going to come up here and tell us what was wrong with our country. And more specifically, he encouraged Congress to reinstate the good old assault weapons ban, with a warning seemingly designed to appeal to those who believe that speaking out against the administration's policies are one step short of sedition or worse. Calderon said, quote, "If you do not regulate the sale of these weapons in the right way, nothing guarantees that criminals here in the United States with access to the same power of weapons will not decide to challenge American authorities and civilians." Felipe, you have a failed country down there. Your administration has been a complete and total failure. The drug cartels run rampant. They control everything. They have all the money. And you want to blame our guns for it? How about this? Are fully automatic weapons being used by the cartels, the rocket launchers, the grenades, those aren't coming from America, all right? So stick it in your pie hole, go back to Mexico, and see if you can do something about that place down there. I mean, it's more dangerous to live in Mexico than it is in Iraq. So I think you have some cleaning up in your own backyard that you need to do before you come up here and try to piss in our backyard. P.P. Calderon, you are the douchebag of the week. All right, now we're going to move on. Real quickly, one thing. Our good old friend Gone Shootin' just sent me an instant message about the government-fired brass. He said you can actually bid on government once-fired brass yourself at http://www.govliquidation.com. Govliquidation.com. So all you reloaders out there, you want to get brass straight by yourself without having to go to middleman, go check out govliquidation.com. We thank our good friend Gone Shootin' for that. And we're going to head right in to our second guest of the day. These guys have put together an interesting vacation resort for shooting and shooting-themed events. And I'll go straight to him and we'll speak from the horse's mouth. His name is Nick Noble. Nick, how are you today?
I'm great, John. Thank you for having me this evening.
Thanks for being on the show, Nick. And I almost don't know how to describe Park Mammoth Resort. It's kind of got a little bit of everything over there.
Well, it is, and I'll tell you what, we're really excited. We've got a lot of traction, and as recent owners of the property, we've really got just a full slate of great events coming up, from big competitions just to sites to come and shoot all kinds of different guns. But let me tell you a little bit about it. It's a 2,000-acre golf resort. It's been in existence since the 60s, and my brother and General Humble and I had a vision of going out and creating a destination resort for recreational and tactical shooting, and that is the Rock Castle Shooting Center at Park Mammoth Resort, and that's what we're in the process of building right now.
So for those that don't know where it is, why don't you go ahead and tell us where it is and how you guys got involved with it and some of the changes you're making to it?
Sure. It's we are located in central Kentucky, right on I-65. We're about an hour and 10 minutes south of Louisville and an hour and 15 minutes north of Nashville, Tennessee. So we're smack dab in the middle of the country. We're actually about within a day's drive of 65 to 70% of the population. So we are actually, my brother and I are former executives in the sales and marketing from corporate America, and we've always grew up in Colorado and had a love for the outdoors, had a love for firearms and shooting and hunting. And we decided to leave corporate America and go do something that we had a passion for. So we kind of looked around, went to the SHOT Show, went to the NRA show many years in a row, and looking for the right opportunity. And we think there really isn't a place that ties together tactical shooting, a place where military and law enforcement can come in and have venues to come shoot with the recreational aspect of shooting, sporting clays, skeet, trap, archery. And we have, with Park Mammoth, just a fantastic resort in that we have a lodge that has 100 guest rooms, indoor swimming pool, big restaurant that seats 125 people, and two golf courses to boot.
Yeah, it looks like a really cool place. Looks like something you could almost take the whole family there, and there's something for everybody to do. I understand you're going to put in actually paintball places to play paintball there for the kids.
We are, and the paintball's really an interesting in business, and it is certainly a business. It's a $10 billion industry, and the demographics of those folks are between 15 and 24 years old that are spending those $10 billion. And we believe that we can not only create an incredible venue for those folks, but after they're done with that and maybe grow out of that, convert a lot of those folks to people that are big-time Second Amendment people that are coming to shoot recreational tactical shooting sports. And so we're excited about that aspect, the paintball. We should have that up and running sometime in the next month and a half or so. And we're already hosting big competitions, John. So that's exciting as well.
What kind of competitions have you guys hosted so far?
Well, recently we have seven big competitions currently this year. Recently we hosted the Saber Defense Blue Ridge Mountain Three Gun Championships, and we had competitors from 43 states and five foreign countries and gave away over $250,000 in prizes that week, and that was the last weekend of April. A new TV show from Versus called Three Gun Nation was on property, and that's really the second year we've hosted that particular competition, and we're the new home of the Blue Ridge Mountain Three Gun. So that was really exciting. And Three Gun's just a fun sport. I mean, pistol, rifle, shotgun, they're transitioning in every stage with all three firearms, and it's a lot of fun to watch. So that was a big one. Our next big competition is July 29th through August 1st, and we host the IPSC 2010 Pan American Shotgun Championships. And, John, that's going to be a big one. We're going to have – it's an Olympic-style event. 3 years ago, it was in Ecuador, and 3 years from now, it's in Greece, and this year, it's in central Kentucky. But this is a Level 4 IPSC event, and we'll have over 40 countries on property competing in tactical shotgun.
That's just amazing. You spoke a little bit about Three Gun. I have I've been trying to promote Three Gun here on the show throughout the year. My goal is – get to a Three Gun event this year. Hopefully here in the next couple of years that we here at AR15.com can kind of put together our own little Three Gun competition for us. And maybe, just maybe, I think we have a place where we can do it now, especially with your central location. Where you guys are located is in a great place. Literally, like you said, it's, you know, it's less than a day's drive for so many people. I mean, just, and I'm looking at your website. Just for our listeners, the website is parkmammothresort.us. Parkmammothresort.us. There's just some fantastic vistas. The scenery just looks so incredible out there. Just looks like a really great place. What other things besides shooting? You mentioned a couple.
Well, we've got a lot to offer. I mentioned the golf, and we've got we originally started with 36 holes of golf, and we've actually shrunk that to 27. And soon it will go to 18. But the 18 holes that we're keeping are beautiful. They're just scenic golf course, USGA certified. And then we turn the other 18 holes into a sporting clays facility. Some of the best shotgun sports and most scenic terrain that you'll see. Those are two things that you could come do right now and have a good time. And, John, really the property, the reason it's so special is the way it lays out. It's 2,000 acres, and we adjoin a 60,000-acre national park. So not only can folks come in to compete in shooting competitions or just do some practical shooting of any sorts, but they can also bring the rest of their family. And within 10 miles, there's horseback riding, there's canoe trips down the Green River, there's cave tours in the national park. Just the Corvette Museum is 20 miles away. They build the Corvette right here locally. And really, you couldn't pick a better spot on the map for several things, just things to do, but also this is a very gun-friendly, Second Amendment-friendly area of the country, and it's really part of these folks' lives here, and they've opened their arms to us and embraced us, and we're having a lot of fun putting this thing together.
So if you got the property and you got down there and you saw how it was laid out and you kind of sat down and you guys worked out your vision, and so when I call you, you're always out there working. You're always out here working on this, he's out there working. Did you ever think, wow, we might have bit off more than we can chew, or has it just been just fun just doing the work to get it ready?
Well, you know what? Every once in a while you sit back and say, woo, this thing's moving faster than we even thought. But the fact that we are able to land seven huge competitions this year has put us on track to you know, be ahead of schedule. We have four major firearms companies on property at any given time during the week, testing, doing research and development on different firearms. So that portion of our business is coming together nicely. In terms of military and law enforcement, we still have a lot of opportunities there. My brother Nathan and I's other partners, Major General Jerry Humble, he's retired two-star Marine Corps general, And he was head of Homeland Security in the state of Tennessee for 2.5 years and general manager of Colt Pistol for a while. So he brings just an incredible experience with him that adds to our sales and marketing background. So every once in a while we look back and have to shake our head a little bit, but it's more in this is so exciting as opposed to have we bit off more than we can chew. So it's really moving nicely, and we're really excited.
Yeah, I'm just in awe at some of the stuff that you guys offer over there. For our listeners, once again, it's parkmammothresort.us is the website. Go check it out. Now, as far as your shooting ranges, as far as long guns, what's the longest range you have there?
Well, the way this property lays out, John, is we're in the hills of Kentucky, and it's a series of valleys and ridges, and we have every bit of 150 to 200 foot elevation drop between our valley and our ridge. So we have just a beautiful natural backdrop. Currently, we have a 1500 meter, 1000 meter, 500 meter rifle range, and you just can't find that east of the Mississippi. And we haven't opened that up to the public yet, but we will at some point in the near future. But it's what's caught some of the attention of the firearms industry, that they don't have to go all the way to New Mexico or Texas or Utah. They can actually do it in their backyard. And so the long-range rifle is going to be a niche for us in that we have the capability to do that. During the three-gun, for instance, Ronnie and Chris Barrett, they had their 50 caliber last year, and we were shooting 900 yards at a car and during one of the stages. That was fun. This year they brought their 338 for stage 9, and we were shooting that about 600 or 700 yards. And so that kind of stuff is fun. But we'll also have a series of pistol and rifle bays and a lot of different terrains for angle shots and those types of things. But like I said, the terrain just lays out perfect to put in a shooting sports resort that everybody can come. It's safe and scenic.
Now, you spoke a little about Ronnie Barrett and him being there. That just sounds awesome. Do you guys envision running training classes out of there in the future? Have people approached you about that?
Well, we will definitely do training, and training of all sorts. Currently, we teach Kentucky's Concealed Carry deadly weapon courses. We also teach a lot of the NRA programs, and your last guest is a friend of mine, and I get a kick out of him, and we do a lot with the NRA. We're doing the NRA Refuse to be a Victim, all the NRA range safety officer courses, basic pistol, basic rifle, cartridge reloading, shotgun reloading, those types of things. But we're also working on a real great program, an advanced concealed carry course. Just in Kentucky, there's 130,000 concealed carry permit holders, and in the adjoining states, there's over 1 million. So we're going to market towards those folks. Now, Mrs. Johnson, you've got your concealed carry permit. What do you do now? And put them through some more real-life situations on what could happen out there, whether it's home invasion, Walmart parking lot carjacking, that kind of thing. And that's going to be big. We're also working with some of the big names in the industry to work through some different venues for them to bring their customers in. And we actually are a great place for the industry, the shooting, hunting, and outdoor trade industry, to come hold national sales meetings, customer meetings, and the like, just because they can come. We have in our hotel, we've got 3 big conference rooms, hotel, all the restaurants, and they can come stay there, meet there, and then go out and have some range days and have some fun out on the range as well.
Yeah, it just sounds like just a great place right there you put together. It's nice that someone that was Second Amendment friendly, you know, a gun lover actually took over that property and turned it into what it is instead of it just, and sorry to all the golf players out there, but instead of it just being some stodgy old country club that only a few people were going to enjoy every year, it sounds like this is going to really turn into one of the biggest, most visited gun ranges in the country, the way you guys are going over there. I assume that's your goal.
It sure is. And our goal and our vision is to become the premier shooting sports destination in the world.
You're well on your way from what I can see of it. Now, you said there's a TV crew down there filming?
Yeah, recently we were real lucky to have Chad Adams, who is with NRA, American Rifleman, and is also doing a new show called Three Gun Nation that'll be aired on Versus in July. And we had those folks down all weekend. They've got some great sponsors, FNH, and Leupold and some of the big names sponsoring that show, and they were down filming all weekend for the Sabre Blue Ridge Mountain 3-Gun, and that was a lot of fun. And there's some trailers on 3-Gun Nation right now of the Blue Ridge shoot, and we had some interesting stages. There was 10 stages on property. We had one that was totally subterranean underground, and that got a lot of attention and has got everybody buzzing about that one. But that was fun to have the crews there. And a year ago at the same competition, we had John Scouten sighting in there filming, and he did a nice little 15-20 minute, and the Scoutens are good friends and have really done great by us. They aired that program 5 or 6 times last winter, and every time it aired, you know, our website went through the roof. So it was nice to have those folks
great.
There as well.
So you guys actually ran a 3-Gun stage in one of the caves?
It's technically not a cave, it's a hole, but it is a long, big hole, and most people would call it a cave. But yes, we had a pistol stage underground with 3 rifle shots at the end, and it was a sight unseen. There was kind of mystery behind it, so they didn't get to see the course of fire, and everybody went in blind and didn't know what to expect. And it made for, as many of the big-time shooters, the best in the world said, the most exciting, unique stage that they've ever shot.
That just sounds really cool. Now, where can people go see these videos?
If they go to 3-Gun Nation on YouTube, and the 3-Gun Nation and Blue Ridge 3-Gun, I think those. If they Google that, they will be able to find. And I'll put a link out. There's actually a link on our Facebook page, Rock Castle Shooting Center. Facebook page, and 3-Gun has a link also on their Facebook page, and I'll send you a link as well if you'd like.
Okay, I'm sure Merrill, as he's listening, is on it right now. He's probably already got the link up in the official Radio Free ARFCOM discussion for today's show.
Perfect.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's on it. But yeah, please send me the link. I would definitely love to check it out. So in 5 years, what do you see Mammoth Resort? The changes that have been made. I'm sure you've got a nice business plan mapped out. In 5 years, what do you see the park resort looking like?
Well, in 5 years, the Rock Castle Shooting Center and Park Mammoth Resort as a whole will be the premier destination for the shooting, hunting, and outdoor trade industry. Everything from hosting big meetings and conferences and banquets to the premier competition site in the country. Obviously, there's only so many weekends in the year, so we're going to be able to really book some of the biggest and best. We're in the running right now for a couple world championships next year, and if luck comes our way and we can get those booked for 2011 will be a big one for us. So 5 years from now, we'll be known for both of those things. We're also going to have an area of the property, because it is 2,000 acres, where we can do some neat things with the military, law enforcement, and the military. We're very close to Fort Campbell and Fort Knox. We're about an hour and 90 minutes from each of those. So we're certainly located to have the Army, and we've had a lot of those folks come visit us. So we'll also be known in those trades, not for big training events, but for some of the smaller groups to come in and get some things done. But we'll also be known, John, as a family destination resort, where you can come in and go canoeing and horseback riding and tour the national park while your mom or your dad goes out and shoots their AR-15 for the weekend, competes, or just comes in for some casual instruction by some of the top shooters in the world.
Yeah, that's great. I wish you the best of luck, and hopefully, like I said, if I can put this 3-Gun together with our mutual friend Joe DeBrulis, who actually he's the one who hooked us up. You guys met at the Blue Ridge 3-Gun, is that right?
Yeah, he came down and spent 3 days with us, and what a great guy he is.
I really appreciate
him hooking us up with you, and I would love to discuss that opportunity further with you.
Yeah, it's something we will be working. It's still a little ways in the future. We got some stuff we need to work out first, but that's on the agenda. So I hope we can get
it.
His name is Nick Noble. That's his name. He's at parkmammothresort.us. I encourage everybody to go check it out. If you want to run a conference or anything like that, this is definitely the place to go. They are definitely shooter friendly and have just every type of format to shoot. They have it over there, from 1500 meter ranges all the way down to the handguns. They've got sporting clays. They've got it all over there. So please check out Park resort.us. And, Nick, I really want to thank you for your time.
John, it was my pleasure, and thank you very much for inviting us on this evening, and hopefully one day we can come back.
We'll have you on again soon. Maybe we can have you after the Shotgun Championships, and you can tell us how the event went.
That'd be great, or even better, why don't you come down to Kentucky and cover it, and we'll show you a good time in Kentucky.
I don't know if we have the resources to get out this year. I think we have the resources for me to make one trip this year. I'm going to do it later in the year.
Okay.
To a three-gun event, I think is what we're going to do. But
perfect.
We definitely want to get you on. We definitely want to get you on the show after that to kind of tell us how it went and give us the rundown on the Shotgun Championships.
Would love to do it.
Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, John.
Please check out ParkMammothResort.us. Just these guys really have it going on over there. They are with what they've got over there. There's no question they will be one of the premier gun ranges and gun resorts in the country in a couple of years. Just they have it all. They literally have everything. So please check that out. And right now we are going to. We had a contest here a couple. What was it? 2 months ago, right at the beginning of the show, we had a contest with DPMS. Representatives from DPMS came on, and they had their Outbreak Omega 3 zombie shoot in Minnesota. And one of our ARFCOM winners won a free entry into that shoot. His name is Chris. No Stock Bikes is his handle on AR15.com. And he went to the shoot, came back, and gave me an after-action report. And here's the interview with Chris. We're on right now with one of our members. No Stock Bikes is his name. His real name is Chris, and he is one of our loyal listeners. And he won a contest a few weeks ago here on Radio Free ARFCOM for the DPMS zombie shoot, Outbreak Omega 3. He won the free entry into that shoot. He went and attended, and I made him promise he would come and give us an after-action report. So Chris is here with us today. How are you, Chris?
Doing great, thanks.
As I understand it, this is the third year they've had the event, and you've actually been to all three events now, is that right?
That is right. I'm kind of fortunate location-wise. I'm probably about 20 minutes from the DPMS headquarters there in St. Cloud and the range there. So I remember wasn't all that long after I had joined ARFCOM that they came up with the idea for the zombie shoot, and I thought, hey, why not?
It seems like a really cool event, and it's cool that you could go to all three. Why don't we go back to the first mm-hmm. one you went to, the very first event 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And tell us about that one and kind of how that went down and what you expected and what you got out of it.
I honestly didn't know what to expect. I was fairly new to ARs at that point, and actually the rifle that I had for that event I bought. I didn't have a rear sight for it, and so I actually bought a rear sight at the range from the clubhouse. And put it on there, and then went and proceeded to try to get my rifle sighted in well enough to not really embarrass myself. But it was there are a lot of helpful people there, so they helped the rookie through it.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about how the zombie shoot works. How do they set it up, and what's the whole theme behind it, and what's the whole general idea of it?
Well, it's a lot like like a three gun type shoot. And and so they have the stages. It's all zombie themed. They have zombie targets, and they kind of set a storyline behind each course of fire. Like you'll see it at some shooting competitions. Where they kind of like to set a stage for that. And the first year it wasn't very organized, but I didn't have any problems with any of the lines and stuff. That was something that a lot of people really complained about. But I'm one of those early birds. I'm one of those people that always says if you're 10 minutes early, you're 5 minutes late. So
you got there. You didn't have any problems with the lines. How many stages did they have that first year? Do you remember?
I want to say maybe four. So I think they had. It seems like forever ago. Even though it's only been a few years, but I want to say they had three rifle stages and one pistol stage.
Okay. And so that second year, how did it differ from the first year? I assume they grew quite a bit, more people, and maybe some more stages.
Yeah. The second year, the crowd, I want to say the numbers tripled from the first year. Because the first year it was really almost more like a hometown shoot event. It seemed like, and then the second year it really started drawing. It started drawing from wider base, and they had a lot more people. And there are a lot of complaints about the wait in the lines, but I didn't have a problem with it because what I remembered from the first year was that the rifle stages were those were the real busy ones, and so I went and hit the rifle stages I wanted right away first thing while everybody else was milling around over by the by the registration tables.
Okay.
Made a beeline for it. And
so you came with a strategy on year two, huh?
Yeah. Definitely had a strategy.
Were you able to hit all the stages you wanted?
On I shot every stage the first year and every stage the second year. And I actually, the second year I shot stages twice because I brought my dad was in town visiting, and I brought him along, and he shot a couple of the shotgun stages, and then I ended up using a lot of his tickets. So.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So I was hogging last year.
That's good, though. That's good. Mm-hmm. Get as much shooting in as you can. Did you improve? Did you do better the second year?
It's a fun shoot, so they don't keep score, and a lot of it's paper targets, so it's tough to get feedback. Okay. Mostly you're there for fun,
sure.
Shooting. You hope you're hitting. If you're shooting at steel, you'll know if you hit, but at paper, there's so many shooters, and to keep things moving along, they can't be pacing targets and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, everything's got a bazillion holes in it, but nobody's keeping score. It's just out there to turn some money into noise and have a good time.
Sure. Now, did you use the same rifle for the second one?
I used that one, but I also had my 22. I bought the Spikes SEBR, the 22 for the off the site, and I used that for a couple of the stages that second year.
And Spikes makes some outstanding stuff, too. I love some of their stuff, so I bet you had a good time with that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's fast forward now all the way up to this year. You win the contest here on Radio Free Arfcom. And actually, you didn't win the entry, but the guy who won the entry was so far away that he wanted to trade with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys traded, and you got the entry. So tell us about this year, and let's really get into detail. Like, you got there. Was it a lot more people? I know it was a two-day event this year as opposed to one day the first 2 years.
Yeah, it was, and something else that they had with this year that other years haven't was the weather. The other years we just had beautiful unseasonably beautiful days, and this year it was raining. And I got there, and the registration was a much smoother process. They had a registration table set up, and they used a large tent. It was really set up, kind of more like a gun show. And if you're pre-registered, you just walked up, and they had your envelope there, and they gave you the envelope and a swag bag that had some nice little goodies from some of the sponsors. Yeah, there's definitely more people, and they switched to the two-day format this year, which takes a lot of takes a lot of the time pressure off. Because last year with it, one day it kind of turned into like an one day all day event, and you had to be there right away in the morning to register, and then shoot stages, and then they had live drawings, and it was all must be present to win for the door prizes and the sponsor prizes, and this year is they had it much more flexible. You didn't have to be there at a certain time to sign in and then go out to the stages. But I overheard a couple of the organizers talking, and I thought I heard them say something like 750 people they thought they had.
Wow.
I don't know if those were all shooters. I think those were some people that just came with. But you know, that's, that was, again, doubled from, the previous year, and I think that was, doubled from the first year, so.
Oh, that's great, man. That's great. So they had more stages then this year, I assume, too.
Yeah, the stages, I didn't even get to shoot all the stages this year, and I sat by. I was there on Saturday and on Sunday, and, it seemed like, there's so many, different options that, I think a person really had to have a better strategy than I did to make it around to everything, or just more time. It was
kind of
a busy weekend for me, so the 2-day format really saved my hide this year.
So I know they had a lot of guns given away actually as door prizes this year. Did you were you there for any of the drawings to get to see who won what or anything?
I know there. I think he maybe signed up after. There was somebody that won 308. It was from the site, and I wasn't there for the live drawings on Saturday.
You say there's a guy from ARFCOM that won a 308?
Yeah, I think he actually signed up after. I think he, he was a friend of some members, and I saw on the hometown forum on a thread that he signed up and said, "I won the SAS."
Oh, cool. Okay. Dang, I wish I'd have known about that before the interview. I'd have tried to get him on here with you as well. So now that leads me to the next question I really did want to ask you was, did you meet any new ARFCOMers there, or were there some ARFCOMers that you knew were there from the hometown forum? Did any of you guys get together at all?
I did not. There were a few that I've met briefly in the past. In a bad neighborhood, he's a moderator on the hometown forum, and I met him, I think it was probably in the first year, but this year was really kind of it was such a busy weekend. It ended up being kind of a hit and run for me, and I saw him and I was gonna walk over and say, "Hey, how's it going?" But just didn't happen with the passing. So
sure, and I bet there was a lot of ARFCOMers that we just didn't even know are ARFCOMers.
Oh yeah, you can't even tell. I mean, you look around and you just think, they've got to be ARFCOMers. I was honestly, surprised to, to see that the kid that won the SAS, I should say kid. Geez, am I getting old? Am I that old? I see all these, younger guys running down there. But yeah,
that's how I feel. People start calling me Mister, and I'm looking around for my dad, and I'm like, "Oh, you're talking to me."
So sometimes I almost feel, like I'm too old to be, dressing up and running around shooting at zombies, but.
You're never too old for that, ever.
Never
too old for that, ever. Nope. Now tell me, did you use the same gun this year that you used the first 2 years?
I did. Yep, it was the same ones. Changed optics. I've got EOTEX on everything now.
Okay.
The iron sights after the first year, don't know if I want to call it a debacle or not, because I don't really know if you hit anything, but I sure didn't feel like I was hitting anything with my little hack sight in job, and I thought, next year I'm going to have an optic, and I ended up with two, so.
Were you able to shoot all three types of rounds? Were you able to shoot a shotgun and a pistol and a rifle round this year?
Yep, I did. The shotgun stages, I really kind of, kind of enjoy those because I don't get a chance to do them much. I've shot pistol leagues in the past, and I like to hit USPSA, contest when I have time.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to do a fair amount of that, but the shotgun, it's real novelty for me. So
that's cool. And this is one of those events that I wish DPMS would start taking on the road. Take it around, hit a few of the big gun ranges around the country, because I think it's the type of thing that will get people more involved in shooting, and especially, I've been trying to promote three-gun events and get as many ARFCOMers as I can to go do three-gun events. I think this is the perfect gateway to a three-gun event, an official one. If you go and do something like this and have a great time, I think it would go a long way to getting people to do three-gun. Now, have you ever shot an official three-gun event?
I have not, but I will say that, just like you're saying, that the doing this shoot is what's got me wanting to do it, and I've one of those things that I've looked at, different events, different classes, and it just hasn't worked out for me, time-wise, just on an unlucky thing. But, shooting a three-gun is something that I'm it's definitely on my radar, and it's a sport that I want to try, and because of the experiences that I've had doing the DPMS zombie shoot.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm going to try to get with Joe DeBurgolis, and see if we can't put together some type of ARFCOM-sponsored three-gun event just for fun, nothing scored, or maybe we'll have one division where people can shoot for competition, and the rest of the divisions will just be for fun, just to kind of get people involved in it. My goal for the year is to go to one three-gun event and one Appleseed shoot. Now, before I let you go, I have to ask you the question that I ask, all ARFCOMers. These are life-important questions. These are the issues that define humanity, and I'd be remiss if I let you go without asking them. So the first one is, of course, the ubiquitous 9mm or 45.
I'm going to piss everybody off here, and I'm going to say 40 Smith and Wesson.
Oh, 40 Smith.
I'm a 40 guy. You know what? It's bigger. It's bigger than the 9mm, and it's got more capacity than the 45. So.
Oh, I love it. Your inbox
The hate mail's going to be coming in.
Oh, yeah. Your inbox is going to get absolutely spammed. I love it. Okay, and the other earth-shattering, humanity-deciding question that ARFCOM can start a civil war over, beans or no beans?
You know, you gotta have beans. And really, Ed Sr. summed it up perfectly when he was on. He said, it's a sloppy Joe. You know, if you don't have the beans in, it's a sloppy Joe.
Ah, he did say it perfect. I'm going to have to get that as one of my bumper quotes and just play that maybe during the show opener or something. Well, hey, Chris, thanks a lot for taking some time out of your day. I know you're a busy family guy, and I appreciate you taking some time just to let us know how the DPMS outbreak shoot went, and just to kind of let people know what they're about. Hopefully we can talk DPMS to taking this to a couple of different places on the road and really let everybody get involved.
Yeah, you know, thanks for having me, and you know, thanks for you know giving the opportunity to, you know, to win the entry and you know get the free entry, and it's you know it's a you know great thing that that you guys in DPMS did with that, and I was really glad to be able to put it to good use.
And make sure you listen to the rest of the show, Chris, because we have Victor coming up next from Tactical Night Vision.
Am I going to be eligible for that, or am I considered a guest?
Oh, no, you're eligible. You are not considered a guest. I am not eligible, however, and it kind of makes me mad. I see all this cool stuff being given away on my show, and I'm not eligible for any of it. But it's all good. It's the nature of the beast, so make sure you listen to the rest of the show. Victor from Tactical Night Vision is going to be on. He's going to give away some really cool stuff and talk about night vision. Thanks again, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks for supporting the show, and I'm glad you had a good time at the zombie shoot.
Yep. All right. Thanks a lot.
And we are back live here on Radio Free ARFCOM. I am your host, John Gold, and this is a segment I've been waiting to do for a long time since we got the show started. I am obsessed with night vision. I think it's just the coolest thing ever, and I've wanted to have this guy on for so long, and we finally got it booked, and we finally got him on. His name is Victor DeCosta from, did I say it right, Victor?
DeCosta.
Victor DeCosta from Tactical Night Vision Corporation. Victor, thank you so much for being on the show today. How are you?
I am good. Well, thanks for the invite. I know it's long overdue, and we finally got our schedules aligned, so happy to be here.
Now, I had a little bit of a mic problem there for the first hour. People sent me a couple messages. We hopefully got it fixed, so if my mic is still not sounding right out there, everybody out there in listener land and ARFCOM land, send me another message and let me know. We'll see if we can get that worked out. But I think we got it. I think we got it fixed. My engineer says there's no bad sound coming in on his end. So this segment of the show should go very smoothly. I've got millions of questions for you, Victor, but before we get started, we know you're going to have a lot of stuff to give away for us. I put the list of the stuff up on the website, and everybody's really excited about being able to enter the contest. So before we get started, why don't I start the contest up right now? How does that sound?
Great.
Okay, so this is what you do, everybody. In order to enter the contest for the giveaways, there are going to be two threads. As usual, what we do here on ARFCOM, we have two threads for the contest. You must enter the correct phrase, in both threads. You have to find both threads and enter the phrase. Here's the phrase you need to enter. Eliminating our adversaries 940 nanometers at a time. Yes, it's pretty long, so you get a pen and write it down if you have to. I'll say it again right now. Eliminating our adversaries 940 nanometers at a time. Now, the places where the two threads are going to be, there's going to be one
in the industry forum for tactical night vision. So go to industry, go to tactical night vision. There will be one there. There will also be one in the night vision thread in the armory. Go to the armory all the way down at the bottom under miscellaneous in the night vision forum there. There will be a thread. It's called, the thread's named the same in both places, TNVC, Radio Free ARFCOM giveaway official contest entry thread. So I just posted the two threads up. They are there. You must post the phrase in both threads, both threads, both the industry forum one for tactical night vision and the night vision forum separately, eliminating our adversaries 940 nanometers at a time. And that will get you entered in the contest. And we can go ahead and go on with the interview now, Victor. Oh, one more thing. If you want to call in or send me an IM of questions for Victor, feel free to do so. And he said he's going to give away your choice of a tactical night vision hat or a patch for calling in and getting on the show or IMing me your question. And if I get that question read on the show, then you will have your choice of a hat or a patch. You are being very generous today, Victor, and thank you.
Oh, thanks. The ARFCOM has been a great home for a lot of years, so met a lot of great people over the years on the ARFCOM, many of who I call my friends. I have visited some of those folks in the great state of Texas, so it's good to be home, per se, on the ARFCOM. It's a great place to be.
It is a great place to be. Now, one thing I like to do with our guests is get some personal background from them before we get into the more professional stuff, just kind of how you got involved in night vision and shooting sports and kind of your history as far as that's concerned.
Well, I started using night vision in law enforcement back in the late 80s. I was always volunteering for the surveillance type work. It always intrigued me. So back in the late 80s, I was using some early night vision Gen 2 devices, and we'll talk about the generations in a moment. And it progressed to working with LE through the early 90s and basically working for the government for a lot of years. A lot of folks don't know, but they'll hear it first here, that TNVC came on the roadmap here about 5 years ago or so, 5-6 years ago. I actually left my full-time government job about 2.5-3 years ago. It hasn't been that long where the corporation had grown so much. We were doing so much business, you know, with the military and law enforcement, that I actually left my government job about 3.5 years ago. And I've been running it full-time ever since and haven't looked back. And we've just been doing a great time. I had a great time, you know, basically training and selling night vision a lot to our military and LE folks. So that's the brunt of my training came from the government side, the law enforcement side, a lot of trial and error, and working through the government and putting a lot of their gear to good use, along with a lot of surveillance work that I did. And it's kind of all those paths I've taken over the years have kind of come into where I'm at today. So it really helps the consumer because I can give all the wealth of knowledge that I've had, I guess, for the last 20-odd years now, almost going on 30 years of working with night vision devices and other surveillance devices to help, you know, the folks out there, you know, kind of work out well with the night vision and technology that's out there for them.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely qualified to do what you do and be in the business you're in. How did the Tactical Night Vision Corporation get started? How did you come up with the idea for that? Was it something that, like, I guess from the sound of it, it kind of grew from almost a part-time gig into what it is today?
It did. Early on, it actually happened that I had, to be honest, how it exactly happened was how I really got in the business about 5-6 years ago. I actually had a Raptor that we were trying to get for the department, and it just so happened, unfortunately, the company we were working with, I could not get a hold of the Raptor that we ordered, and it was a very difficult time at that time. We didn't know what happened with the Raptor, and another colleague in the industry, I had to go to him for some dire help with our department who couldn't get the Raptor, and asked me about, it was almost 6 years ago, have you ever thought about selling night vision for a living? And I laughed at it, of course, because I never thought to be any type of salesman, to say the least. I was really involved with what I was doing with the government. And he basically gave me a couple pieces of night vision and to see, you know, what I thought about them and do some testing and evaluation for this company way back when. And it started basically on the ARFCOM, that we had a couple pieces that we sold on the ARFCOM. I basically talked to, you know, Ed Senior and Ed Junior at the time and said, hey, this is what I'd like to embark on. What does it take to be a dealer? And it was a little risky affair back then because it was a lot of money to, you know, to start up a dealership in the ARFCOM, obviously, and they're well respected just as dealers. So for me at that time, it was a pretty risky investment to start out, but I knew the ARFCOM had a great audience, and more importantly, there was a real niche in the industry that wasn't really filled back then, because I would say the victim of that I couldn't really get a lot of good night vision information way back when. A lot of articles were not written. A lot of information was not out there. The people you talked to on the phone, some were working on commission, some weren't. It was really hard to get really good in-depth information about what really works out there in the night and what didn't. There just wasn't a lot of publicity about the events. Of course, the government was using the devices, the military, the law enforcement community, by and large, were using some, but there just wasn't a lot of information out there. So I thought about that, and I knew that I could probably share a lot of experience that I've had over the years, so it bloomed real well. It was a good niche back then that I knew I could bring and take a lot of the mystery out of night vision about, hey, how it operates, what's good, what ranges they work at, different generations, what help might help you at what distances that you're trying to engage at. So it was a lot of mystery taking. We took a lot of the mystery out of that, you know, kind of ninja black suit that we saw
right
way back when that nobody really talked about. So that's how we got started, was on the ARFCOM early on, about probably 5-6 years ago, and it's basically blossomed where it's at today.
Now, my first exposure to night vision was way back in the early 90s. I had a friend who worked for the Drug Enforcement Administration, and he had some night vision goggles. One day we were on our way home from a fishing trip or something, and he's like, hey, you want to see something cool? And we pulled over to the side of the road, and he's like, take a look at this. And I'm sure they were just old Gen 1 stuff, maybe Gen 2, I don't know. But I was blown away. I looked out there in the middle of the night across this field. We were up in Wyoming, and seems like you could see everything. It was a really dark night, just a little bit of starlight out there, and I was blown away. But that was really my first exposure to night vision. I've just been kind of a little something that I've always kind of kept an eye on ever since, and I've never quite had the money to be able to afford what I wanted for it. But why don't we talk about kind of the history of night vision, you know, where it got started and how the difference between the generations. You know, you hear Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 2 Plus, and to some of us it's like, oh, what's what here?
Sure. This will be long-winded, so bear with me, the different generations that they've progressed through years.
Sure.
And I'll preface this by saying that I'll talk about dates and years, and so the experts on their ARFCOM forums know, especially the night vision forum. There's a wealth of information on the ARFCOM night vision forum, the technical savvy that's out there, and I won't mention users' names to embarrass them who are listening, but they know who they are. There's some very technical savvy folks that are out there on our night vision forum on the ARFCOM. So I won't talk direct technical specifications, except give you a few rules of how night vision works to tell you that any really in-depth technical questions, you can go to our TNVC website, tacticalnightvision.com, on our technology. We give a great, great overview of the different generations and years. And of course, your questions on the night vision forums in the armory section, which you talked about early on, is really a wealth of information. There's some phenomenal technical savvy folks that are out there from Europe that we see from overseas as well as here in the United States that have a wealth of knowledge. So if you really want to talk about some in-depth technical scientific philosophies about how night vision works, by all means, visit that site as well here on the Night Vision Forum and the ARFCOM, and they'll go ahead and set you straight as well. Basically, the Gen O, the Generation O, we saw developed in the 40s. The Germans basically in the early 40s, I believe 41, 42, were the first ones to really come out with night vision that they called Generation O. The United States really recognized it, and basically the first from the reports that we've researched and understood in the Battle of Okinawa in 1945 was the first night vision device that was basically used. It was very big, very cumbersome, very heavy because it needed artificial basic IR light source to be used. But nevertheless, it was used probably for the first time in 1945 in Okinawa during the Battle of Okinawa. During that time, a lot of developments after 45 began to happen. We see the Germans kept doing what they do quite well. And in the 50s, we saw some pretty much some breakthroughs in some technologies you can read about on our website. But that evolved to basically the Generation 1 that we saw coming out in the 60s with the AN-PVS-1 and PVS-2 that you saw, the starlight scopes, you hear that expression, from the Vietnam era. This was official Generation 1 that was used to, during the Vietnam era of twilight ambient light scopes. These were the first ones basically to take starlight and actually amplify a pinpoint of light. To let you know, a current Gen 3, which I'll get to in a moment, amplifies a pinpoint of light approximately 30,000 times. Just one pinpoint of light. That's how sensitive the current Gen 3 systems are at the moment. What happened was during the Gen 1, we saw technology, of course, get developed at a pretty rapid pace. And we went into the Generation 2, what we saw in some of the mid-70s. The Generation 2s were probably, we saw double the resolution. And when we talk resolution, we talk line pair without getting too technical. The higher the number in line pair, when you hear the term line pair, is better resolution. The Generation 2 is about 29 line pair that we see even today in some of these surplus Gen 2 systems, leaps and bounds over the Generation 1 that we see. Generation 1 also has about a useful lifespan of about 500 hours versus Generation 2 of about 2,500 hours somewhere in there. They're not in concrete, the lifespans, but they're about 2,500 hours in Generation 2 with about the levels of the line pair of about 29. Generation 2 can work with very low light. Its resolution, of course, is mediocre compared to the current Gen 3s that are out there. The current Gen 1s are even half less resolution than Gen 2. We see there's a lot of discussions and a lot of, I put it mildly, a lot of discussions on the forums we see between Gen 1 and Gen 2. There's a lot of fishbowl effect, the way the optics and the intensifier tubes were developed between Gen 1 and Gen 2. So you see a lot more distortion in Gen 1 than you do Gen 2. We don't sell Gen 1 here at TNVC. We feel most folks, for any amount they pay for Generation 1, it really is necessary to save your pennies and buy at least a Generation 2 to really see in the dark. Not only to see in the dark, but to see with somewhat good clarity and good resolution. So we recommend always that folks, if they're going to be getting into night vision for the first time, is to seriously look at a Gen 3 and save your pennies at the minimum. We always encourage everybody, obviously, to go with a Gen 3 device, which I'll talk here in a moment, because the utmost in clarity, brightness, and resolution, a Generation 3 cannot be beat. So with that said, as we go on to the generations, in the 70s, we saw the Generation 2 basically get developed that we see in the PVS-5s in that type of era. We see those still in use today, some of the PVS-5s. We see after that in the 80s, we saw is when we started seeing the Generation 3s that the ITT started producing. We have from that era, what is today is the current Generation 3. They have changed a little bit over the years, some different generations on the Omni contracts, which started out at about 57 line pair. We talked about those line pairs with early Gen 3. Some were 52 to 54 and 57. But today's generation that we see is about the normal 64 line pair that you hear people talk about. Generation 3 is the latest and greatest light amplification device that's out there, the best bang for your money, and is the most clearest and brightest technology that is out there that you can get for what they call I2 or night vision intensifier tube technology. Its resolution and clarity is double over a Gen 2 device. It is over quadruple over basically generation device. And there's one other generation that we talked about that also came out, from the Netherlands, called a depth tube. This is actually what they call a Generation 2 Super High Performance, or Gen 2 SHP, a depth tube. These are very, very good tubes, and a lot of folks, for a lot of years, it was kind of a well-hidden secret when the depth tubes and the Netherlands folks put these tubes out. They have about a resolution of about anywhere from 52, somewhere to up of mid-50 line pairs. These are very, very good units and intensive fire tubes from the Netherlands called DEP tubes. And we call them in the industry Gen 2 SHP. They have about a 5,000 hour usage on the tube versus 10,000 on the Gen 3s. They approach the Gen 3 in the resolution, because we see some even tip the scales at 57 line pair. They're very, very close to the resolution of a Gen 3. What they do lack, though, is the general brightness, the overall brightness a Generation 3 has. Okay. With the lack of brightness of a Gen 2 SHP can be you can make that up by using artificial light source like our IRT and VC torch or IR illuminator. You can use that in conjunction with a Gen 2 SHP and get some very, very good resolution and rival some Gen 3s that are out there. So I thought I'd interject the Gen 2 SHP that's out there now. Also developed probably in the 90s, somewhere in there. We saw those come out in about the mid-90s. But current Generation 3 is where we're at today. Generation 3, typical 64 line pair unit you see from ITT. L3 also, Northrop produces a Generation 3 system as well that we see. Currently, it is the current contract and forefront of all our warfighters, LE, and the mainstay of what we sell here at TNVC is a Generation 3 tube, whether that's going in the PBS-14, whether that's going in a D760 dedicated rifle scope or a Raptor or a clip-on PBS-22 that clips out in front of a day scope we'll probably talk about in a moment here. So that is the latest and greatest Generation 3. Now, there's been discussions about Generation 4. It's always a hot topic on the night vision forums when we talk about Generation 4. Officially, the military has not designated a Generation 4 because, after all, the generations are designated by contracts that are given to ITT, and the military is what designates most of the generations that we see out there. Generation 4 was basically a filmless type tube that actually came out several years ago on a contract that was written for the military who wanted better light gathering, better sensitivity. And a technical Generation 4 was actually put to paper and came out. It's called filmless technology, which doesn't have the ion barrier film on it. ITTs basically have an ion barrier film that's called thin film that's on the actual system. Filmless tubes don't have this ion barrier, so therefore it brings in a little bit more light and a little bit better resolution. But what the military found out, the durability of so-called Gen 4 systems did not fare well under recoil at all. They black spotted fairly easy or any hard impacts to the unit, sparked the microchannel plate, and you basically got what they call a black impact spot on the tube. So those are out in very, very limited quantities. L3, I believe, still sells what they call filmless technology. Some folks and some of the marketing stuff that we see out there, we see some folks call them Generation 4. But technically speaking, there is not an official Generation 4 unit out there. There is the next, what some folk call it a Gen 4, if they want to call it a Gen 5, is a hybrid system that incorporate a current night vision technology into a hybrid system for a thermal device. So what we see is this hybrid system, it interweaves night vision and thermal. So you get the best of both worlds. You get a heat signature from thermal, and you also get the I2 capabilities, a night vision capability of seeing in the dark. ITT has a monocular out there. OSTI also has a system called a DUNS, a clip-on device. Very, very good units. I think there's some work still to go on those systems. You don't really get the best of both worlds at the moment. I think they lack resolution in the night vision, and they lack the overall resolution in the thermal devices. They're not really as good as looking at a pure night vision device or a pure thermal device. They're getting there. I think that's what the forefront is in the future, is we're going to see standard, if I could look into a crystal ball, I think 10 years or 15 years from now, hybrid systems, night vision / thermal, will be the mainstay. I'll see both those technologies combined, and the current PVS-14 that you see today that we sell will automatically have a thermal / night vision signature built into it. So, and if I look at my crystal ball, I think that's what we'll see for a Generation 5, if folks want to call it that. But officially, it's not a designation at the moment. I'm just kind of forecasting what I see right. And the trends as the industry goes forward.
And I've actually seen
that was long-winded. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's great. That's all the information we wanted to hear right there. That's great. See, I've actually seen some of the screenshots of those hybrid devices, and they're really cool looking, I have to admit.
They are. But by looking at a pure night vision device versus a pure thermal device. There is some trade-offs and some compromises when they combine both technologies. They're getting there. I still think they're about 5 years away from really, really nailing it and getting themselves a good system that is compared to a dedicated night vision or dedicated thermal devices. We're not there, but I think we're getting real close.
Okay, we've got a few questions here real quick before I go on to some of my questions. People have been sending me instant messages with a few questions. This one is from 9mmprn. He says, can you please share your thoughts on the GT14 Gen 2 Plus units versus the more expensive Gen 3 units? I, like many, am looking to purchase my first night vision device. I don't want to break the bank. I know you kind of went over this a little bit. Maybe if you could help him out a little bit with that.
You bet. Yeah, good question. We get asked that weekly, and that's a great question. Don't feel bad for asking. We take phone calls every week on the same exact question. The GT14 is a great unit. It's basically a monocular unit. We haven't really talked about the different types, but monoculars are a single-type night vision device, whether it's a PVS-14, a GT14, a D300. Those are monoculars. They go over one eye. They're basically a handheld unit, head-mounted or wear it around your neck, or even weapon-mounted behind an aimpoint or EOTech. They're monocular systems. The GT14, as we talked about, they have different types. We use a Gen 2 Plus or Gen 2 Depth Tube. What you see is real close to Gen 3 in resolution, as we talked about. You're getting anywhere from that 52 to 57 line pair versus 64 line pair of a typical Gen 3 unit. So they're very close resolution-wise. What we see with the GT14, the lens, the glass lens of the GT14, has a little less edge-to-edge sharpness than the glass in the PVS-14 or the MUM, the multi-use monocular built by Insight Technology, the body housing anyways. So the glass in the GT14 is a little less resolution in the glass itself, so the edge-to-edge sharpness is not as clear as a PVS-14 around the edges. But I'm just being very specific, and it's good glass either way. It's not like you're looking into a fishbowl like you are with Gen 1 systems. The tube, as we talked about, is a Depth Netherlands tube, line pair 57, line pair 52, somewhere in there. What we find in very dark arenas, you would need some sort of IR illumination versus the Gen 3s. They don't see quite as good in the dark, in pure darkness, overcast sky, no starlight, no moon. You'll need some sort of help from an IR illuminator. You will see a target downrange. The resolution might not be as clear as a Gen 3 because the unit's going to be fighting a seed light, where it's not bringing in as much light through the intensifier tube as a Gen 3 sees. Overall, though, I would say on a 100-yard man walking down at 100 yards, no moon, overcast, worst-case scenario, you'll still see a person walking. I would say that's a good way to look at it. You'll see maybe a man walking across 100 yards with a GT14 depth tube. No moon, dark area in the middle of no city lights. Whether you know it's a male or female, you probably wouldn't be able to tell without IR illumination. With a Generation 3 current Omni 7 contract PVS-14, you would probably be able to tell it's a male or female walking at basically 100 yards. So that's kind of the intricates of the detail and resolution you kind of see between both systems. But overall, GT14, a very good system for the dollar for folks just trying to get into Gen 3 and they can't quite go over the hump to get into a PVS-14. The GT14 is a great device for the money for what it brings on the Gen 2 depth tube side.
Okay, now, before we go to some of these other questions that people are asking me, you spoke a little bit about the different types of products there are. There's monoculars, there's scope-mounted, there's clip-ons. Can we kind of run over the basics of that real quick?
You bet. I think that's a good time to bring it up. There's monoculars that we talked about. The PVS-14s that they're called from ITT basically is the forerunner that produces over 450,000 units, the latest contract, to the military. That is the latest and greatest mainstay that's out there. It's more or less the standard by all which everything else is judged is the PVS-14 monocular. Single lens, you can either, the versatility of a PVS-14 is just awesome, the versatility of it. You can put it over your eye, wear it helmet mounted, hand hold it. It can also be weapon mounted on low caliber weapons such as a 6.8 SPC or below. We don't recommend any high recoil weapons on PVS-14s. It can actually peer through and set behind on a weapon behind an EOTech or aimpoint or whatever device has a night vision setting and peer through these devices and use the device passively. So so they can be used as a weapon type system. If you want to go passive without a laser broadcasting your position, you can put this on your weapon and actually have it with the dots and the aim point of EOTech working in your favor so you can use it as a targeting platform.
Oh, okay.
So the GT-14s will do the same thing. The D-300s will also do the same thing. These are all monoculars. The D-300 is an older unit that was basically made up probably in the 90s time frame. Those are used for the Gen 2 systems that are out there, the Gen 2 U.S. surplus tubes that are out there. They have a little less mounting capabilities than the PVS-14, so they're not as I would say, versatile as a PVS-14 for weapon mounting, because there's a multitude of weapon mounts out there for PVS-14. GT-14 is another one that's very similar to the multi-use MUM monocular from Insight Technologies, who makes the MUM body housing. Very lightweight system. As we talked about the lens systems, a little less resolution than the PVS-14, but it is a monocular that's nevertheless that you can once again head mount it, helmet mount it per se, hand hold it, or put it behind your weapon and use it as a weapon sight as well for low caliber weapons. We see the MUM multi-use monocular, once again another monocular that's out there that Insight Technology makes. Very good glass, rivals the PVS-14. It's right up there with the PVS-14 for glass resolution. Imaged in the PVS-14 with the same tube that you see in a MUM will give you identical images. They're very, very close. There's also binocular systems that are out there that a lot of folks talk about from our aviators that we see nowadays to our pilots that wear ANVIS 6 systems or ANVIS 9 systems. These are the ones you probably see in a lot of magazines and a lot of shows. You see the pilots having dual monoculars attached to the helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
What they are very high-end ANVIS 6s. I actually run with a pair of ANVIS 6s converted to a ground unit that I run with for certain applications. So ANVIS 6s are multi-coated lens. They bring in a heck of a lot of light. Great systems as well that we see our current aviators and current military pilots wear. There's also the BNVDs that we offer, binocular night vision devices, which are phenomenal devices that Chip Lasky or Klasky, that's known as a username on our ARFCOM, is my marketing manager who did a outstanding review on the BNVDs. Another binocular type system, these systems actually can swivel up like a pair of binoculars, so you can either wear them as a dual monocular binocular, or you can flip one, I should say you can twist and turn one up out of the way and turn it into a monocular. So great thinking went into that system that's developed. Those are the binocular systems. There's one other.
Are you still there, Victor? We will get him right back on here shortly. Seth will take care of that. Meanwhile, I want to remind everybody, please enter in the giveaway. Victor's given away a lot of cool stuff from Tactical Night Vision. In order to enter the giveaway, you need to enter in two separate forms. There is the industry form for Tactical Night Vision under industry, and there's also in the armory way down at the bottom, and it's the Night Vision form. You need to enter in both forms, type in the phrase, eliminating our adversaries 940 nanometers at a time, in the Tactical Night Vision Radio Free ARFCOM giveaway thread. In each of those forms, you will be entered. The entries will close next Friday, and the drawing will probably happen Saturday. So we have that to look forward to. Also, feel free to call in with any questions you have for Victor. Call in and get your question on the air. And he said he will give you your choice of a tactical night vision hat or a tactical night vision patch. So just for getting your question in on the air. Or you can go ahead and IM me your question. I've got a few questions in the queue right now from people that sent me instant messages with their question for Victor. And I'll get to your questions as soon as we get Victor back online here. He should be here in just a second. Oh, Seth said he is calling him right now. So, yeah, it'll just be a couple of seconds before we get him back on. We do have these occasional technical hiccups here, but it's nothing to worry about. We have super producer Seth behind the scenes working on it. So, once again, make sure you enter in the contest. Right now it looks like we have 75-ish or so people entered, 76 now. So go ahead and make sure you put it in both threads. You need to be entered in both threads, in both forms. Victor, are you back?
Yes, I am. Thank you. So the other device we talked about, it's not really, some people call it binocular, it's not really a pure binocular, but it's called a PVS-7. What that system is, it's been around mainstay for our U.S. military for many of years. It's basically two eyepieces that look into one lens system. What we found over the years is the PVS-7s were used early on and caused a lot of accidents because of the lack of depth perception of the PVS-7.
Oh, yeah.
Because what you have is two eyepieces looking into one intensifier tube. I personally have I have a hard time using PVS-7s because the lack of depth perception actually gets me nauseated if I wear them over long periods of time. It's really the jury is still out, but we see more and more people using PVS-14s and single monoculars over the PVS-7. There's a reason, of course, ITT switched over several years ago, and the current contract, as we talked about, is about 400,000, 450,000 plus PVS-14s that are current issue that are going out there to our U.S. Armed Forces. What we find with the PVS-7s, why they are comfortable to wear, we find that the folks are walking in a wide open area, a rural area, and a lot of guys still like using them for stargazing. We used to sell a lot for people looking up at the stars. It's another thing that night vision does incredibly well, and we see more and more telescopes using intensifier tubes to bring in all the lights for those deep sky objects, the nebulas and star clusters, globular clusters out there. The sevens work great for stargazing, so we have a lot of customers that still use them for stargazing. They like watching the satellites go through the sky, and it works great for that. So we still see a lot of military folks that are still issued PVS-7s, but we highly recommend that folks do not use those for driving. That's very difficult to negotiate corners and things of that nature because your depth perception is just that much lack of versus the PVS-14. So
right.
Those are basically the binoculars that are out there. And we also have dedicated night vision rifle scopes that are out there that are just that. They're a dedicated, you imagine a day optic that you see for your daytime rifle scope, but it's just the opposite. It's an actual night vision night vision dedicated rifle scope that people use on their rifles. Most of them that come in a 4X or 6X configuration, fixed 4X or 6X, that's out there, such as the D740, D760 6X, D740s and a 4X. These are fixed systems, and also we see the military system that's out there, now available to commercial sales, is probably the granddaddy of all, is the Raptor 4X and the Raptor 6X. Very heavy scopes. They're all mil-spec body housings, mil-spec glass. They have the best edge-to-edge sharpness for long-range observing, and that's what we see in the Raptor 4X and the Raptor 6X that are out there. So those are the basically what you see on our website, what you see current mainstay what the military is using, and currently those are the different variations that are out there between monoculars, dedicated rifle scopes, and then we have one more type of technology, and it's called clip-on night vision devices. Clip-ons are very simple. They're a clip-on device that what they use is they use your dedicated day scope to peer into the actual clip-on device that you clip on in front of your day scope. So The two current mainstays that are out there is basically the PVS-22 that's used quite heavily by the military, and its big brother also the PVS-27. Called the MUNS, the Magnum Universal Night Sight, and then the PVS-22 is called the Universal Night Sight. These are very novel devices. They work extremely well by just clipping out to the front. So you have to have, of course, the real estate, as we call it. So a lot of law enforcement industry folks, professionals, hunters now are seeing more and more of the beauty of using clip-on devices. Of you do not have to change your day dope or your zeros at all or take off your day scope. You simply clip on this device out in front of your scope, and you peer through the night vision device with your magnification. We find the PVS-22 can get up to about 8x, 8 to 10x with good results, and use your day scope as you would use it during the day, except you're looking at a night vision enhanced image through the clip-on device.
Oh, wow.
So these two marvels of technology, the PVS-22-27, are great for that reason, that you do not have to change your day dope or anything else. Your point of aim, point of impact does not change introducing these devices, and you're simply just looking through the night vision device that you're clipping out on the front. So those are the clip-on devices that are out there.
Is the quality on those clip-on devices the same that you'd get from say, a PVS-14 or something like that?
Yeah, good question. It's basically, the good comparison is it as good as looking as a dedicated night vision rifle scope such as a Raptor or D760? Not quite, because you're still using your day glass as you would, and we won't overestimate or underestimate what the clip-ons do. They're very good at what they do. The resolution is superb, But of course, as you crank up more magnification, you're going to have to need some artificial illumination. You'll start getting the sparkle effect, and night vision tube will start, running into issues of struggling to see light if you start getting up to 15-20x on a really dark night with a PVS-22. Okay. With that said, if I took a ACOG 4X and stuck a PVS-22 in front of an ACOG versus a D740 or a 4X Raptor versus that, no, the image on a dedicated night vision rifle scope, obviously with a big, 80 to 90 millimeter objective on a dedicated rifle night vision scope versus a 68 millimeter on a PVS-22, it is built for that purpose, a dedicated night vision rifle scope. You will get a little bit resolution downrange, a little bit better light gathering. So I'm not saying the PVS-22 is bad by any retrospect or the PVS-27. It's just that the dedicated night vision rifle scopes will give you the best and cleanest and most resolute image that you can bring out of the night vision tube. The clip-ons, they're very, very good, but just not quite as good as a dedicated night vision rifle scope. As for PVS-14, a 1X system is what we're talking about, a very, very, very good image. In fact, a 1X system, based on itself, they're hard to beat. If a 740 or 760 got clocked down to a 1X, a PVS-14 or a MUM system would be neck and neck with it. There would not be that much of a difference. That's how good the images are. That's how good the images look through a 14 or a MUM.
Oh, okay. Is the price lower for these clip-on devices?
No, that's the stinger part. They're quite expensive. We see the BNS, the PVS-22 non-mil-spec version in the $7,700 range. These are very pricey devices that are out there. Some of the mil-spec versions run in the $8,500. It's Big Brother PVS-27 Magnum Universal Night Sight. You're looking close at the tipping the scales at about $10,000. These are very, very expensive devices, these clip-on devices. And a lot goes into making these clip-on devices. We see a lot of cheaper versions of PVS-22s and PVS-27s, and unfortunately, we've tried some of the cheaper versions that are out there. We have seen on many occasions a lot of point of aim, point of impact shifts after a certain amount of recoil and a certain amount of rounds downrange. We see the lenses shifting inside the cheaper units and causing some pretty drastic point of aim, point of impact shifts. Not all of them have that issue. Some do, some don't. But what we found is the most reliable systems that we sell, either for the hunters, law enforcement, and military, is when people's lives depend on the gear that can't afford a point of aim, point of impact shift. These are the clip-on devices that we offer, either the PVS-22 or the PVS-27 that you see on our website. But with that technology and that reliability for field use, it comes with a hefty price, obviously.
Right. Okay, let's go through some of these questions. I got a lot of questions here in my inbox.
Sure.
So, first of all, this one isn't a question, but Ridge Dog says, "Victor is the man. I've never had better service from anyone. Tell him Ridge Dog, Bill in Oregon, said hi."
Hi, Bill. Thank you very much. Yes, great customer. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. This question comes from Tyler, 259. He says, "Hey, what would you recommend for a regular guy who wants to add a night vision setup to his spit hits the fan gear? For use with or without a rifle, there seems to be many options between scopes, binoculars, goggles, clip-ons, like you said." He said, "What would your suggestion be just for a regular guy, kind of an entry-level type thing, to help him?"
It's hard. We get that asked daily in emails, IMs, and phone calls. We always say it just depends what range you want to see and engage at. It really comes down to how good and how far you want to see. Those are the first questions we ask all customers. With that said, so I would have to ask you what range you would like to see at, what type of area you live in. Is it more of a rural area? Is it more of an urban area? And basically your budget. With that said, the most versatile systems for a guy who's going to use it, most versatile speaking, is a monocular type device we talked about, either D300, GT14, or PVS14. Those are the monoculars that give the most versatility we talked about. So without really knowing the range that you're looking at, even entry level, it just depends on how much you want to see and look at what distance. But most folk on the entry level systems that are out there, They like the D300, the Gen 2 Plus systems. It's fairly inexpensive versus the Gen 3s. You're looking at tipping the scales at the somewhere for the mil-spec Gen 2 Plus in the $1,400 to $1,600 range. So for general entry level, for general observation, where you don't need a lot of distance and you have some ambient light, the Gen 2 Surplus tubes and the U.S. Surplus tubes work well for that arena.
Okay. It sounds almost like with night vision, it's like everything else. It's like your choice of gun, your choice of ammunition. It's all dependent upon the situation you're going to be using it in.
It is. And budget, of course, obviously plays a big role of it, because we have, that's a big price difference between typical $1,600 Gen 2 D300 versus a $3,500, $3,600 current PVS 14 that's out there. So there's a huge jump in that from a Gen 2 to a Gen 3. So that's why we like to ask, what range do you really want to see and hit at, and basically what your price point is that you want to come in at. And so that's how we kind of start the path forward and getting the customer what he needs.
Sure. All right. Now, I know you wanted to avoid some of the more technical stuff, but it looks like one of your technical friends from the forum showed up. I'll ask this question anyway. I'm not even sure what he's asking here, but I'm sure you will understand. His name is Doclat, D-O-C-L-A-T. He says, I teach radiographic physics in a medical imaging program. From what I understand, the image intensifier 2 on a fluoro tower or C-arm operates under basically the same principles as NVGs. How close am I on this? We have an input phosphor that glows when radiation hits it. This light is converted into electrons with a photocathode, and they are accelerated to the output phosphor while being focused by electrostatic lenses. Now, my question is, how does a modern rad fluoro unit compare to current issue night vision goggles?
Very close, what he just talked about. Very close. We have photons basically through a photocathode that can convert it into electrons who go through a microchannel plate. They get excited. Basically, they go through a phosphor screen and convert it back to photons. So what he described is basically exactly how a night vision device. They're very, very close. To answer your question, they're very, very close to what you just described. So not much difference in what you described. I'm sure there's a few idiosyncrasies that are out there, and I'll get beat up if I misquote someone else and from someone else. And but like I said, you can go to our website to get a good definitive answer on how technology works that will definitely give you some retrospect about what your technology you just spoke about, which it sounds like is very, very close.
Right. And I hope he understood that, because I didn't. It all went way over my head.
That's okay.
The next question comes from Mac O. You've kind of answered this already. He says, as someone new to night vision and interested in purchasing one, what would you recommend as a good entry level for spit hits the fan use, both standalone and in conjunction with an EOTech? You said basically it depends on where you're at and what your situation is, right?
It is, and what your butt arrives at for what hits the fan type. Once again, it really depends, it's based on your budget and how good you want to see. Now, with that said, he brings up a good point. If you're using it for home defense, it's very important to see your target with good resolution. And it brings up a good point of why we always talk to LE about target recognition. Like anything else, a day scope, you want to have good target recognition. We talk about guys who, the hunters that come to us and say, hey, Vic, and I want to go hunt some hogs at 100 yards, 150 yards, maybe 200 yards, especially 200 yards. You want to have, for liability reasons, you want to have very good resolution. It's very important,
right?
Just like a day scope. For the hunters out there, you want to make sure you have a good enough night vision device at 200 yards, which would be a Gen 3, to discern a small calf and a hog. If they're standing,
all right.
If they're standing and not walking, with a Gen 1 or Gen 2 device, it could be very difficult to see and discern a calf and a small hog at 200 yards. Same thing applies to if you're trying to protect your loved ones, and we talk about an engagement that you might have to make for self-defense. Keep in mind, it's very, very important that folks understand that they will have to go to court. They will have to go ahead and at one time get called upon and show the reasons that you had to use deadly force for a what hits the fan scenario, that unfortunately you had to use deadly force to protect your loved ones. It's real important that you have good recognition through your night vision device. You must know what that person is doing, what that threat might be when you're looking through it through a night vision device. So it's important in those scenarios when you're talking about self-defense, indeed. If you're talking about that in type of engagement, simple observation, obviously, when you're not looking forward to using that behind your day scope or using that behind an EOTech or aim point, maybe Generation 2 might work out for general surveillance. But if you're looking at a really critical situation where you're using a device to protect a loved one or yourself for self-defense, you must have the best resolution available for target recognition. I can't stress that enough.
That's a really good point. It really is. Another question here. I was going to actually ask this very similar question. This from Dino 1130. What's the difference between a mil-spec tube and a commercial-grade tube? And do civilians get the same access to the same equipment as military, or does military kind of have a small edge over the civilians?
We do with our SFKs. Our Special Forces kit just came out. It's a good question. And I'll answer it partially because I'll be perfectly honest with you. When I talk to ITT engineers, only half of them can ask my question either, and I've asked this quite a bit over the years. Mil-spec criteria tubes have a minimum specification that they have to follow. There is probably hundreds of data points. I might know about 10 to 15, and most ITT engineers tell me the same thing. There is a mil-spec criteria that the mil-spec criteria is made from the contract from the military, who says the tube must have a certain resolution, it must have a certain line pair, it has certain blemishes that are acceptable in certain areas, a certain number, and a certain size and certain location. So with that said, it's not really better or worse, it's just that the mil-spec criteria has to be satisfied in order to meet a military contract. Example is our Special Forces kit we just now that became available for commercial sales. It wasn't because they were restricted because they had any magical enhanced performance over a non-mil-spec commercial tube. What it all meant was supply and demand for the mil-spec contract. They had to make sure all the contracts were fulfilled first, because ITT at the moment does not have a restriction that says mil-spec tubes cannot be sold to civilians or commercial market. That does not happen. There's no law or restricting regarding that. All it is that the mil-spec unit or whoever it might be, the mil-spec organization has set out on a contract to tell ITT, hey, our tube needs to meet these certain requirements. It needs to meet X, Y, and Z. ITT builds the unit, slaps the mil-spec, it passed your mil-spec standards. Here you go, military member or LE member, it met your mil-spec standards. Those are the major differences, that it meets a certain criteria versus the commercial tube. The commercial tube, there isn't a minimum or maximum. There's a minimum, of course, for commercials, but there isn't a maximum type of mil-spec criteria. They're made from the commercial market, but they're not made to a military specification. The tubes are no better in some instances in resolution. Some are a little bit better in resolution than I see versus the mil-spec. I see a lot of mil-spec tubes with a lot of cosmetic blemishes. We talked that happens during the manufacturing process. You see these small, tiny dots, some larger dots on the intensifier tube. All that means is that the mil-spec criteria can have some in there because they're allowed, but then on the commercial end of the tubes that I see commercial tubes that are just clean as a whistle. They're beautiful-looking tubes. But for some odd reason, during the mil-spec criteria, they didn't get passed as mil-spec tubes. Whether it's a solder point that wasn't large enough, whether it didn't meet some other type of cosmetic blemish, I don't know. But the commercial tubes in no way are inferior or worse than the mil-spec tubes. It's just that the mil-spec tubes actually passed a mil-spec criteria set out from the government.
Sure. Oh, that makes sense. Total sense right there. We haven't even said the website yet. The website is tnvc.com. tnvc.com. Check it out. All the products, everything you could ever want to know about night vision is there. If you have any questions, go to the industry forum for TNVC or go to the night vision forum, and we'll get that taken care of. Our producer here, Seth, wanted this question asked, and he must have been reading my mind because this was my next question. Are there any export restrictions on high-end night vision stuff? And I have actually heard a rumor, Victor, that if you are not a U.S. citizen, there's certain tubes you're not even allowed to look through. Is that correct?
That is true, and there was a visit long and good post on the Night Vision Forum on this. What we've been told, first off, let me state this. We have a disclaimer under all our Night Vision tubes that you see and all our Night Vision ads that you see that no Generation 3 device can be exported out of the continental United States. Only verifiable U.S. addresses can be shipped to. They are not allowed to be taken out of the country, and if you're going on vacation somewhere outside of the continental United States, they're not allowed to be taken with you on your person whatsoever. Even though you bought them as a legal citizen here, they can't be taken overseas with you. If you get caught with that, severe fines and penalties from the State Department. With that said, that is indeed a true statement. When we first got into night vision, of course, you know, with the fines that have gone out there over the years of other export violations, and there has been some very notable fines that have been given out for export violations. It's a very serious business that we see with export violations. We were actually told with many meetings that we've had, several meetings with the State Department and our attorneys as we embarked on this very critical to safeguard U.S. technology, is that non-U.S. citizens cannot look through Generation 3 devices. Technically and officially, that is what we're told. We adhere by what the State Department tells us. Most folks, if they go see a booth, at the IATA SHOT Show, one of the biggest shows out there, is a SHOT Show every year. ITT has a huge trailer, and I'll tell you a funny story that happened. It's actually a pretty funny story. My marketing manager laughs at me a lot about, and a few other people in the industry, is I think it was 2 years ago, ITT had their big trailer there, and I was there, and you know who forgot his passport, and all I had was my driver's license, and those folks that know at ITT have known me for years. I was not allowed look through any night vision device that ITT had there, let alone the trailer that they had set up to look at some of the latest and greatest night vision devices, because I didn't have my passport to prove that I was a U.S. citizen. So ITT takes this law very seriously. Most of the folks that you see at big vendors that you see at the SHOT Show will ask also if you're a U.S. Citizen and prove to that effect. So, indeed, not only they are restricted to be taken out of country overseas, they cannot be sold overseas without explicit permission with State Department variances written and gained from the State Department. Some night vision Gen 3 can be sold overseas. State Department paperwork will have to be in place with those governments and those personnel before those devices can be sent overseas. It's not impossible. You just have to have the correct paperwork.
Okay. That makes total sense. It's good to know that ITT is so strict on that. I mean, we do not want those type of devices falling into the wrong hands, that's for sure.
No, we don't. And like I said, there's been controversy that we saw on, you know, some of the conjecture of State Department rules and regulations. We don't interpret our philosophy here at my corporate is we don't read into anything or interpret law. We call and we have meetings with State Department officials, and we basically do what we're told, and that's what we did, and it's a very serious issue with ITAR, so we really had to dot the I's, cross the T's. No ITAR, I mean, all ITAR is enforced, no overseas shipments, any Gen 3 devices, and or Generation 2 SSPs, because of the line bears over the limits with the State Department allows to go overseas. Even though we do get it from overseas, we're not allowed to export it once we get it here in America. As crazy as that sounds, that is still the law. We're not allowed to export Gen 2 SHP tubes. So, as well as non-U.S. citizens are not allowed to look through Generation 3 technology.
Okay. Here's an interesting question we got from Doc Katz. He says, I run a lot of fishing charters at night, and I worry constantly about hitting things in the water, like pallets and stuff like that. For the money, what would be a good night vision to use on the water?
Good question, and we sell lots of boaters and yachtsmen and things navigating at night. We recommend the multi-use monocular. We have a lot of our customers who dive with the multi-use monocular. 66 feet, infinite amount of time underwater, salt water as well. We recommend the MUM, multi-use monocular, for that purpose. For waterborne operations, that's what the MUM basically initially was used for. Naval Special Warfare had a request for a good dive-type 66 feet, and that's why the multi-use monocular was developed several years ago. I said many years ago for the body housing itself. Completely watertight, good down to 66 feet is what they rate. So waterborne operations, we recommend the multi-use monocular above anything else for pure water operations.
Okay. Now here's a couple of questions that I had. I haven't had a chance to get to them yet. As far as you talked about the lifespan of a tube, what is it that makes a tube degrade, and is there things you can do once you've bought one to keep your tube to last longer?
Indeed. A typical Gen 3 is 10,000 hours. It's not set in stone. It's a lot of hours. We'll talk strictly of Gen 3 as we talk 5,000 hours for the depth tubes, 2,500 for Gen 2, 500 hours per se for Gen 1. They're not set in stone, you know, plus or minus several thousand hours is probably the norm. We haven't had one that reached 10,000 hours, so we can't tell you. If it's just going to die out at 10,000, some of the engineers we talked to at ITT said you'll see a slow degradation of performance as it reaches 10,000 hours, which ITT recommends and we tell our customers as well is two important matters, how to handle your PVS-14 or any other high-end night vision devices. Handle it like any other high-end optic. They're quite robust, of course, but you don't want to drop them from 4 feet off the ground, just like you would your day optic. We recommend folks take the batteries out when not in use. That's a big deal. Batteries do explode. It happens countless of times. I've had my share of batteries explode, in flashlights, and we see the damage that can happen.
Right.
We see cell phones, what happens when batteries happen, when batteries explode. So, acid is not good that leaks out on a night vision device that could destroy a power supply and hurt your night vision device pretty quickly. So we always recommend if you're going to store it for any amount of time is to take the batteries out. ITT also recommends, and we talk to our customers about this, every month they also recommend is to power your night vision device on for 5 to 10 minutes. ITT recommends this because like any other high-end device, if electrons are stored up and you get a power surge when you turn it on the first time, you could blow a power supply. So we're not saying it could happen, but it's just a good caution that ITT also recommends is to turn your night vision on. Use it, you know, 5 to 10 minutes out of the month just to make sure there's no power surges or anything else. Do you have anything else built up inside the system itself? So other than that, they're very, very very robust. They're very, very reliable systems. We don't have many PVS-14s that have been returned over the years. I'm just amazed at the amount of technology that goes into these systems and the robustness and the actual reliability of these systems. As we talked about, I can talk maybe just a few, two or three PVS-14s that we have had returned over the last probably 5 years, and that is a great, great track record for monoculars. We do not see many returns in PVS-14s. They are that robust, and speaking of all ITT systems that we're talking here, we do not see many returns at all.
You know, Victor,
and plus the Night Enforcer unit, we offer a 5-year warranty on the tube, so it's a great insurance policy for those.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you guys offered any warranties on tubes. That's actually...
Oh, you bet. On ITT commercial systems, on our Night Enforcer systems, we offer a 5-year warranty on those systems specifically for the Night Enforcer. It's a 5-year warranty on those systems. On the tube, it's 5 years, and on the system itself, it's 3 years. So it's probably the best warranty in the industry that we have for our Night Enforcers, and that's probably another reason why we sell a good many systems of the Night Enforcers. It's a great insurance policy for somebody using, you know, shelling out that much money, obviously.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, we're almost out of time. I can't believe how fast this interview has gone. We've only got a couple more minutes, and I really wanted to talk about some of the products that your company makes specifically for night vision that other people don't make, and maybe some of the stuff you guys are looking into the future at making.
A few things that just came out with the announcement of the radio show. We just did our brand new TM14 called the new PVS14 twist mount. The beauty of this is it works with the aimpoint twist base. So the beauty of this is that you can use this system on your head and quickly transition to your rifle by using the aimpoint twist base. Aimpoint twist base can be used for the aimpoint 3X magnifier. So people, as we talk about, can go passive to active very quickly from going from your weapon to your head and head to your weapon. So it's quick transition. This little ring and a little base plate stays on the PVS-14. You wear it on your head. It only weighs like 0.6 ounces, and you can go right to your weapon, back to your head in under 10 seconds. That's our first item we just announced last week. We have a new item not so night vision related that just came out, and that's our new M14 cheek riser that came out for folks who are using scopes on M14s. We here at TNVC got really impatient with seeing a lot of our warfighter.
Oh, no. Oh, we lost Victor. And we're completely out of time for today. We're going to have Victor come back here in a couple of weeks and just talk some more about this. I've got a bunch more questions, and there's a lot of questions in the queue. We are completely out of time here. I don't even think we're going to have time to get Victor back online, and I apologize for that. I want to remind everybody, please enter the giveaway, Tactical Night Vision Corporation and Radio Free ARFCOM giveaway. The official entry threads are in the Tactical Night Vision Industry Forum and in the Night Vision Forum in the Armory. You must enter in both threads in order to be entered in the contest. To everyone whose questions I didn't get to, I apologize. I'm sure Victor will be more than happy if you call them. He'll answer all your questions. He's got the best customer service in the industry. Tactical Night Vision is the industry leader for night vision solutions. So anybody getting ready for the spit hits the fan, getting your setup put together, bug out or bug in, whatever it is, or just for home defense, maybe you want to watch birds, do photography, whatever it is you want to do, Tactical Night Vision is the place for you to go to get this stuff. We are completely out of time. I've got to say goodbye. I want to thank Merrill, as usual, for keeping the links up to date, all kinds of helpful information, pictures, and stuff like that that he puts into the discussion threads for the radio show. I want to thank our super producer, Seth, for making things go as smoothly as we can. Joe DeBurgolis, as always. Nick Noble was on from he's the CEO of Park Mammoth Resort. Chris, thank you, No Stock Bikes, for your DPMS Outbreak After Action Report. And Victor, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm going to call you right now just to thank you personally. I apologize for the problems. On our way out, of course, I want to say God bless the great Republic of the United States of America.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.